Welcome to False Flag Weekly News, the weekly news show that digs deep for what's really going on in the world. I'm Kevin Barrett with co-host Professor Anthony Hall, and we have a doozy of a list of stories today. Once again, there's way more than we can really do justice to, but we'll just do our best, and we're not going to beg for money because thank you, people set us up ahead of time, so let's get right on to the stories. Well, by the way, happy Veterans Day, folks. I will have Gordon Duff on, Veterans Today editor, on my radio show tonight. But let's get to the scary veterans news, which is veterans doing mass shootings in America. That we had Devin Kelly from the Texas church supposedly killing 26 people. And I've seen no evidence that this is a total false flag, crisis actors or multiple shooters. No, I don't think so. But the guy's not linked to any terrorist groups, which means he's not Muslim. He likes atheists all over his Facebook page. If you like ISIS on your Facebook page, you're a terrorist. But if you like atheists and you go shoot up a church, you're not. Go figure. What do you think, Tony?
Well, here we have a shooting. Is it a real shooting? Is it staged? Is it directed at the First Baptist Church? Some sort of this mobilization of religious symbolism in this concocted global war on terror. But let's take it at face value, as we try to do. We try to give the benefit of the doubt before we get very skeptical.
Okay. Well, this was interesting. It happened in Texas, and the story is that the gunman, after mowing people down in church, left and was then suddenly pursued and fired upon by neighbors and a passerby. Apparently in Texas, there are a lot of armed people, but the pro-Second Amendment people apparently haven't gotten everybody armed, or else folks in the church could have all been shooting as well as the gunman, which actually probably would have helped. There's a whole gun control debate around this, and one theory is that these things are happening partly to take away our guns, and that might be part of the agenda. If it's Gladio B, they're trying to terrorize us into total submission to the powers that be, and, you know, we're not the only ones talking about this. The Washington Post, we see in our next slide, is talking about how everybody down there in Texas, right there by the hospital, by the victims, they're all talking about this being a false flag. Tony, do we have a bigger audience than shows up on our YouTube viewer count?
Who knows? Who knows how honest Google is? Of course, they're probably honest, right? With it, people like big wheels at Google wouldn't concoct things and mislead us. Or lead us into various research lines and away from other research lines. What catches me about this story, Kevin, is the blaming of the shooting on a certain Sam Hyde. This Sam Hyde comes up again and again. Sometimes he's a Nazi. Sometimes he's a Klansman. And he just wants to kill, and he produces all kinds of material on the internet about killing people. It sounds to me like a kind of Joshua Goldberg scenario, somebody who is an expert at creating these false personas on the internet, and this is all intertwined with this story.
Well, I don't know about Sam Hyde being a sophisticated intelligence agency Mossad operation. It sounds to me more like the Sam Hyde thing is a kind of a sophomoric prank. There are lots of sophomoric pranks on the internet. Joshua Goldberg, at the surface level, looks like a sophomoric prank, but you dig a little deeper, and it turns out that he and his handlers have an agenda. But I don't think that's the case here with Sam Hyde.
Okay.
So that's my take, anyway.
It's a free country.
But
well, it is
indeed. So we do have a lot of possible angles on how this. I mean, if it were a false flag, it could easily be a MK Ultra thing where this veteran who's been in the military where he could get worked on by their PSYOPs experts could easily be programmed Manchurian candidate style in an MK Ultra style brainwashing program to get him to do something like this. Why would they do this? They're not blaming Muslims. That's the main item on their agenda. Well, one spinoff here is that they're saying they need to be able to get into everybody's smartphone. They're saying that Devin Kelly's smartphone is unhackable, even for the FBI, even for the NSA. And so they're telling Apple that they have to put a backdoor into all smartphones so the NSA, FBI, and so on can read everything on everybody's smartphone. And this is there's a huge push for this now.
That nasty Apple company preventing people from spying on us more deeply. How dare Apple do that? And is Apple really doing that? Not. I doubt it.
I don't know. Christopher Wray at the FBI says, quote, in the first 11 months of the fiscal year alone, we were unable to access the content of more than 6,900, and then he repeats, that's 6,900 mobile devices using appropriate and available technical tools, even though he had legal authority to do so because of Apple. So you think this is all a big concocted false flag distraction? Maybe so, Tony. Wouldn't put it past him.
Geez, the surveillance state just isn't being given enough room to penetrate deeper into our private information.
They can't read everything yet. That's terrible. Well, let's move on to the next story, or the next slide, rather, which is, okay, why would anybody down there in Texas, in the hospital where the victims are, be talking about whether or not this was a false flag? Why would they speculate about such things? Well, here's one reason. The Las Vegas thing is looking worse and worse. Every week we find more evidence that this Stephen Paddock shooting from the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel was not what it seemed. And here we have ballistics data showing us a muzzle flash from the neighboring room, not from Stephen Paddock's suite. At least that's how I read this. What do you think, Tony?
Is it possible that the Las Vegas Hall of Mirrors false flag is actually a variety of players who have different agendas, and somehow that's why there's so many inconsistencies and so many varieties of perspectives on this?
Yes, absolutely. And one scenario we see over and over and over, and we hear it from Laurent Guyonneau regarding some French false flag events. We hear it from Robert David Steele regarding American ones, regarding Orlando, and regarding Las Vegas. We hear people suggesting that in so many of these cases, we have a Western intelligence agency or Western deep state drill or something, drill operation that gets hijacked by Israelis and their organized crime assets. And often they take something where nobody was going to get hurt and they make sure a whole lot of people get hurt. That may have been actually what happened on 9/11, as the scream of anguish from a high-level CIA operative, the goddamn Israelis, as he watched the towers exploding and burning. That was Richard Fuse, who was screaming that. So maybe that's what's going on here. I don't know.
Is it possible that the term false flag is becoming normalized and integrated into the language so that everybody's starting to use it?
Well, U.S. officials are. Here we go. Lawrence Wilkerson, Colin Powell's right-hand man, Roger Cressley, Richard, Philip Mudd, Thomas McInerney, John Bolton, William Binney, all these ex-officials talk about false flags routinely because false flags are routine.
Yes, Philip Mudd with a very august title, CNN counterterrorism analyst, one of those using the term false flag to mean using other people's stuff. You want to do some kind of violent act. You don't want to use your own weapons, say if it's a U.S.-backed event. You want to plant Eastern European weapons or whatnot. That was Philip Mudd's view on it. Anyway, it's just so interesting how this term is just so casually being used now, mm-hmm. as if people understand what it is. Of course, false flag, it seems to me that there's so many different types. There's so many variations on how it's done. We need adjectives to break down the different varieties of false flags.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Eskimos need a lot of words for snow. And the fish need a lot of words for water. I mean, we've got so many false flags around us of so many different flavors, varieties, hues, colors, and so on and so forth, that I guess we're going to have to work on that, Tony. Well, if we just copyrighted the term false flag when we started this show and forced everybody to give us a dime every time it was used, we would be a lot richer right now than we are.
We have a diversity of illusions.
Indeed we do. Well, if we want to get to the heart of this problem and solve this problem, which is really what it's about, right? I mean, every week we tell you so much bad news. Well, how could we make things better? Well, one way is to take away the power of the world's biggest crime cabal, which is the international banksters, by taking away their power to create our currency by lending it into existence at interest. And the way to do that is by making all currency creation public. There should be no more private currency creation. The Rothschild family should not be allowed to create most of the planet's currency. And that's what's going to happen in New Jersey if Phil Murphy puts through his program. He just won the election for governor. And he's a hardcore, big-time public bank supporter, even though he used to work for Goldman Sachs. This is great news. The establishment, as we see in the next slide, predicted it would be an uphill battle, but he won. Tony, you see public banking sweeping the world and solving all these problems that we talk about every week?
Well, just to see the word public being used in a good light is a significant development in its own right. This neoliberal era, there is no public sphere. There is no public interest. Everything has to be private, private, commodified, commodified, put borders around it and commodify it, make it into property, private property. A public bank, the idea that money should be conceived more as a public utility than something to be owned and contained and aggrandizement through this medium. Public banking, this has a huge implication. Ellen Brown is going to comment on this. In Canada, they're always talking about this Bank of North Dakota, the one public bank created by the state in the USA. In Canada, we have the Bank of Canada created in the 1930s that still exists, that has the power to do these interest-free loans, to create money in a different way, to create money in the public sphere and then lend it at no interest or very little interest for infrastructure projects to build up the quality of life for people, to make the economy more productive for everybody, including average people. In Canada, there's a running legal battle over trying to force the government of Canada to move away from the private bankers back to the system that once was in place until 1974 with this public bank, the Bank of Canada. So this is a huge topic, and money is in a way the ultimate false flag. This system can only work of creating new money through loans, through private bankers create loans, and this creates, large quantities of new money. Until we get control of that. And of course, that system can only perpetuate itself with the fantasy that there is some value in this money when there is no real inherent value. But as long as we act as if there is, it works. Let's change the system. Way to go, Phil Murphy. Way to go, New Jersey. And this is a very important development.
And the private bankers aren't happy. In this story, we had Michael Afuso saying, why is this the lead talking point? Never have I heard a clamoring for a state bank. Well, you just heard it because the guy just got elected on that platform. Okay, well, I just did a little satire on this over at Veterans Today. The Irish bankster conspiracy, Phil Murphy being, is it just a coincidence that this Irish guy who used to work for Goldman Sachs is pushing public banking? I mean, maybe the Irish are trying to take over the world and create a new world order with its capital in Dublin. Anyway, if you want the full story, read the satire. But next slide, Ellen Brown is coming on my show tonight, and she, of course, was reacting to the Phil Murphy campaign, and she'll have a lot more to tell us. But let's move over to Saudi Arabia, Tony, because that's where they prop up the Rothschild petrodollar, and there's all kinds of craziness happening over there. We have the king standing down, handing over power to Mohammed bin Salman, his son. We have 11 princes, 4 ministers arrested. And in the next slide, we see we have 2 rivals apparently assassinated, although this guy, Abdulaziz bin Fahd, who was supposedly killed in a shootout when he was being arrested, the Saudi authorities now are saying that he's still alive. And he's an interesting guy. He actually was calling for Muslims to head for Palestine to liberate the Al-Aqsa Mosque. He made that call last summer, and then he was shortly after that put under house arrest. And now he may be dead. We don't know.
Imagine the Riyadh Ritz-Carlton right now is being used as a prison. There is some kind of purge taking place. Mohammed bin Salman, he's taking over power. He's dispensing with his rivals. He's eliminating them or criminalizing them, otherwise detaining them.
For corruption. In Saudi Arabia, corruption?
It's so interesting, you know, when we think about Saudi Arabia trying to deal with all of this money and power that is sort of apportioned to them because they happen to be on top of this vast fossil fuel creation. You know, think back to the 1970s when you had Adnan Khashoggi as the most prominent Saudi Arabian, you know, dating Liza Minnelli, having great yachts, dressing, you know, Western style. And now you have these, you know, these same type of operations that were developed during that period, like Barrick Gold, for instance. But instead, it's under this guise of a kind of religious government. As I see it, the Saudi system, as it's breaking up, this must be a reflection that essentially a civil war type situation is developing among elites. And in the United States, we have a civil war situation among elites. Of course, the average people are sort of left out of any exercise of power. And people don't really care what they think. They just get the false flag, you know, iconography thrown their way so they can be manipulated by this elite or that elite. But
well, I don't know, Tony.
It's breaking at the top.
The people, you know, have a stake in some of these things. Like in the Middle East, all the people essentially unanimously, everybody in the region agrees that the Zionist entity, it's called Al-Kaihan Sioni in Arabic. You can't say Israel. You have to say Al-Kaihan Sioni because the whole region agrees it's not legitimate. Okay. And the Saudis prop up its legitimacy, but the Iranians essentially voice the view, the unanimous view of the people of the Middle East. And that's what this conflict is about, Saudi versus Iran. That's the issue. That's the really only issue. Well, certainly the biggest one by far. And likewise here in the United States, these same conflicts involve the people versus the elites. And there, it's not quite as clear cut here. In some ways, the Democrats represent the people, like public health care, Bernie Sanders. In some ways, the Republicans do, you know, keep our guns and be skeptical of government. But the people are involved in this fight.
Okay.
You're so how about the okay? That's yeah. You don't have to refute everything I say. So then the next slide we have Pepe Escobar. Pepe had a really good analysis of this Saudi Knight of the Long Swords, I would call it. He called it knives, referring to the Nazi event. But Tony, how about this Lebanon thing? The Saudis are not only basically declaring war on Iran, even as they're purging their own elites and arresting people left and right, they're essentially declaring war against Iran and Lebanon at the same time. Wow.
Well, here is Saudi Arabia kind of lost its effort to overthrow the government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. Now in Lebanon, Lebanon is increasingly influenced. The government is influenced by Hezbollah, which is tied to Iran. So the leader of Lebanon, Saad Hariri, he resigns when he's in Saudi Arabia, complaining about the growing Iranian influence. There are the Saudis fighting the Houthis in Yemen in a sort of Vietnam-type situation that they can't win. They lost in Saudi Arabia. Now things are going against them in Lebanon. Its rival, Iran, is expansionary to some degree, is exercising a muscle. You know, it seems to have a right it seems to have a viable balance between you know, the religious element of society and the more secular commercial aspects. Anyway, Saudi Arabia is increasingly under assault, and they're turning on each other in the core of the regime.
Well, Hassan Nasrallah asked, "Who's being kidnapped here?" Right? The Saudis claim that Lebanon has been kidnapped by Hezbollah, but the Hassan Nasrallah, who's a lot more popular in Lebanon than the Saudis are, that's for sure, suggests that maybe it's actually Saad Hariri who has been kidnapped by the Saudis and forced to read from a script. It certainly looks like a hostage video type situation over there. And so the next slide we see that they're also going after Qatar as the Saudis declare war on Iran and Lebanon at the same time. We have the UAE, the Emirates, declaring economic war on Qatar It's actually, they're not declaring it. It's secret. This was an effort to destroy Qatar's currency, and it was revealed by insiders at the Banque Havilland in Luxembourg, who then leaked it to The Intercept. So they thought they were going to destroy Qatar's economy and take away, steal their World Cup. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, Nasrallah, you know, the Hezbollah has built up its role within the Lebanese government. Hezbollah is the greatest check, the most significant check on the expansionary aspirations of Eretz Israel, Likudnik Israel. And so it's depicted as the ultimate terrorist. And now there is an effort to also isolate Qatar, which is doing business openly with Iran. And there's been an effort to use derivatives and all kinds of tactics to undermine their bonds and such. It's not working that well. Qatar continues to be viable. Qatar is a place where Al Jazeera has its base, and there's a lot of discussion. Important things go on in Qatar.
Okay. And you know, you and Trump, Tony, both need to know that it's not Qatar, it's Qatar. And Qatar. It's not Yemen, as Gordon Duff always calls it. It's Yemen.
Yemen.
Okay. So anyway, Frank Gaffney, let's go on to neocon Islamophobe lunatic, and look at those demonic eyes. Frank Gaffney is openly drooling at the prospect of a huge Saudi versus Iran war. These neocons are so shameless, and they're being propped up by the neocon media. This was in WorldNet Daily, which actually takes this lunatic seriously.
Ah, here comes the Persians, the alarm bell rings. The Persians are coming in with white hats, according to Dr. Barrett here. The Persians, the Islamic Republic of Iran, are the greatest scourge ever to hit humanity, according to Frank Gaffney. And he's just delighted to see Saudi Arabia being drawn deeper and deeper into outright aggression and conflict with Saudi Arabia, Arabia and Iran.
It's not just that I like Iran. It's not just that he hates Iran and loves Saudi like Arabia. Iran. No, it's quite the opposite. He hates Saudi Arabia too. He hates all Muslims. He wants to destroy Islam. Whereas I'm basically saying that we're basing in an era of massive injustice against the entire Islamic world. And within that setup, the current Saudi leadership is very much on the side of those who are destroying the entire Islamic world, whereas the Iranian leadership, at least parts of it, are not. So that's, anyway, just a little clarification.
And it seems to me Frank Gaffney is quite approving of Saudi Arabian leadership and their hostility towards Iran. He identifies with that. The fact that there are also Muslims, well, that doesn't preoccupy him.
He'd love to see the holy cities and Riyadh as well in total rubble, I'm sure. Anyway, the next slide is the CIA 9/11 falsification attempt is shameless. This is Iran's view of how, as the U.S. Zionist proxy Saudis rev up their war on Iran and Lebanon, suddenly 9/11 shifts, and it wasn't 15 out of 19 hijackers who were Saudi anymore. Now it's all somehow the fault of Iran, because there was some tenuous link between LCIA, duh, and the Iranians way back in 1990. Well, 1992 maybe it was. Okay, nice try there, guys. It's amazing people fall for this.
Well, let's remember that the group blamed for 9/11 to this day, Al-Qaeda, which got a lot of support from U.S. And other entities in its actions in Syria. It was known then as al-Nusra, that al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, Daesh, ISIL, these agencies are fought by the Iranian government and are genuinely opposed in battlefields by the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, for instance, and their proxy militias in Iraq, and by Hezbollah. Saudi Arabia, is with the terrorists. Iran is against the terrorists, and it's absolutely shameful for the U.S. to point to Iran, which is fighting the people who U.S. says did 9/11.
Of course, that's the real problem, is that they actually are fighting these Tech Fury extremist terrorists in Syria. And if we move to the next slide, we see that here we have the U.S. military helicopters evacuating ISIS commanders from Mayadeen. And weapons, U.S. NATO weapons are being recovered in Mayadeen and other places that where the Syrian government has taken back these former ISIS strongholds. So all of this that we were just talking about, all of this war that's brewing and boiling as the Saudis go berserk, why are the Saudis going berserk? Well, and why are the Israelis going berserk? And why is Frank Gaffney yearning for a bloody war? Well, it's all because Iran and its axis of resistance backed by Russia has won in Syria.
Yes, the decision by the government of Vladimir Putin in 2015 to actually commit military power to really fighting al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, Daesh, ISIS, they come in various names and brands, but it's the same group, it's a proxy army. That decision by Putin in 2015 to actually show what it looked like to fight them on the ground in a real way, not an illusionary way, changed history. And we're seeing the implications of that now.
We have a related story by Nafiz Ahmad. Nafiz is the author of kind of the first seminal great 9/11 truth book, The War on Truth. And here he is telling us what we pretty much already know on this show, which is that Turkey, Saudi Arabia, other U.S. puppet allies, NATO countries, et cetera, created ISIS, of course, on behalf of the U.S. and its Zionist sponsors.
Do we have an InSurge intelligence article after this, following this?
I don't think so. I think we have an NBC News article.
Because the way I looked at it, Nafiz Ahmed, he's the sponsor of this website called InSurge Intelligence.
Well, I think, yeah, this is probably up there, too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this is a different format for that same article. But in any case, this InSurge intelligence article that contained the same story you're talking about, it featured a certain Professor Daniel Bieman, who was pointing to the role of Turkey and Pakistan and Saudi Arabia in funding and backing these what is depicted in the West as these terrorist organizations, these mercenary groups, these proxy armies. I was just wondering when I saw this Professor Daniel Bieman, and he apparently was a staffer on the 9/11 Commission, and this is given as a kind of credential, as a good credential, rather than as a discrediting feature of this person's CV. If Nafiz Ahmed isn't resorting a little bit to limited hangout with his new InSurge intelligence
mm-hmm. Well, that's what Gordon Duff thinks, too. And again, Gordon and Ellen Brown will be on my live radio show tonight. That's from 7 to 9 p.m. Central, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Revolution Radio, which is freedomslips.com. And, yeah, Gordon would definitely support that interpretation. He thinks this article is total limited hangout. I don't think Nafiz is doing that on purpose, though, Tony. Nafiz is just a kind of a cautious guy who sort of half stays in the mainstream world and is able to keep earning a living there, so more power to him.
And who keeps his university job.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe we should have taken a lesson from him rather than vice versa. I can't get him on the radio show because I know, you know, if we have an honest conversation, he's going to say things that'll get him in trouble. So moving on to Syria, you know, we are already in Syria, and this was already at InSurge. By the way, Tony, the previous story was InSurge Intelligence. And this story from NBC News points out that now the U.S. is the only country left that hasn't signed the Paris Climate Accords. Syria just signed. They were the last holdout. I guess they had other things on their mind. So here we are once again. Now we know who the real rogue state is.
And the fact that Syria is entering the Community of Nations is still able to participate in this kind of process, given the horrific assault that government has faced and the challenges to it, and it's still operational. It's quite a feat, really. I see it as a real testament to the resilience of the Syrian people in all of their diversity, who did stand in solidarity with their government through a really trying period.
Well, in a way, I'm surprised they didn't sign it earlier, because this whole problem in Syria is largely the result of desertification that destroyed a lot of Syria's agriculture. And the agricultural regions are primarily the ethnic groups that are unfriendly to the central government. And that's what led to all the unrest. Now, there's the innocent explanation that this was just climate change, desertification, and drought. But then there's the manufactured drought interpretation that says that this was indeed a destabilization program through weather modification. And Tony, when I was in Iran, I think it was the last visit to Iran, I talked to somebody who's involved in weather modification there, fighting back against the weather modification warfare against Iran, which is going on. And he said they're doing pretty well. They're holding their own. But for a while there, Syria was not, at least according to that interpretation. And so this whole Syria problem was very much set up by a massive drought.
And the question arises, to what extent is geoengineering taking place? To what extent are these droughts or storms being manipulated to create certain conditions, to achieve certain geopolitical objectives, to maybe have populations move from here to there? To what extent is the weather now a concocted creation of the national security state, the deep state? How real is geoengineering? Pretty real.
So when our, you know, so when somebody comes along and says, "Man, let's talk about the weather," it's not as innocent as it seems. We could talk about the weather right here on False Flag Weekly News. Let's move on to another topic, though. Islamophobia. The truth about radical Islam. Okay, here we see massacres by gunmen who are not Muslim attributed, except, of course, the Islamophobes try to imagine that that Paddock is actually an Islamic name. Whether they think he was like Ibn Paddock or Abdul Paddock or something, I'm sure. So we have two huge massacres by guns by non-Muslims, ostensibly. And then we have like an ostensible Muslim killing eight people with a vehicle. And, of course, the response is utterly and completely different. That's a pretty good point. And this whole radical Islam hoax in the next slide we see was pretty much a concoction by, well, Netanyahu in his 1979 Jerusalem Conference on International Terrorism and everything that's been happening since, including this whole series of anti-Muslim false flags. That's what's created Islamophobia. Tony, you and I went to Paris for the False Flag Islamophobia Conference a couple of years ago to point this out to people working on Islamophobia who will not admit the role of false flags.
Yes, this article by Cartolucci. Who is Tony Cartolucci? I've heard theories that there's an array of nom de plumes, but in any case, Tony Cartolucci, very influential commentator on the role of the Western intelligence agencies in creating these proxy armies that are made to appear as quote unquote terrorists. There's a focus in this article on Ahmed Sattar his role in all of this. Ahmed Sattar is connected to Abdel Rahman, who was connected to the 1993 events at the World Trade Center. Interestingly, the lawyer of Ahmed Sattar, Lynn Stewart, she ends up being incarcerated. It's so, how the rule of law.
Next slide. Move on to the next slide. That's the Ahmed Sattar slide.
Yeah. Okay. That's the story. Yeah.
That's the son of the guy who was framed for the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and related issues, along with the blind Sheikh Omar Rahman. But we got to move along here because
comment on this. So here is the son of Sattar becoming a fireman. His dad was represented by Lynn Stewart, the lawyer for Sattar, ends up going to jail in the United States, just like the lawyer for Ernst Zundel in Germany went to jail in Germany. And it seems that attacks on Ernst Zundel were those that he was a terrorist and he was incarcerated for a long period of time in Canada without charge on terrorist certificates. The destruction of the rule of law to demonize terrorism, this is a feature that I wanted to draw attention to.
Right. And so this poor guy is subject to a witch hunt by the Zionist tabloid press in New York because his father was set up by Zionists and witch hunted by Zionists. Well, why would that happen? Well, it's because the Zionists have so much power in the U.S. government and in the British government. As we see in the next story, we have this big scandal where Priti Patel, this high-level minister with next to Theresa May, is doing secret meetings with Bibi Netanyahu and the rest of the Israeli creeps, and it's all top secret. Well, what's that about? Well, the Israelis are basically running the British government, just like they run the American government.
Dog bites man.
Okay, next slide. And over in Israel, our next Israeli or Zionist scandal story, we have a possible false flag where there's supposedly an attack on the Druze village of Hadar, Syria, and the Israelis have been bombing Syria like crazy and with no media coverage whatsoever, are now ready to actually invade Syria using their own attack on this Druze village as the false flag pretext.
Yes, and the Israeli government and the Druze in Syria are quite compatible, apparently.
Yeah, well, the Israelis will always find anybody who's willing to work with them for money and for, you know, corruption and for, you know, turning on the other people around you. As long, you know, they'll pay off Kurds, they'll pay off Druze, they'll pay off just about anybody. In fact, we may be the last people that in media who weren't on their payroll. At least it would seem that way if you compare the content of False Flag Weekly News to everything in a lot of the rest of the media. But every now and then the media does its job on some story. And this Harvey Weinstein thing, they've really gone after him. The New Yorker had this amazing story about how Harvey Weinstein hired Kroll Associates, top-level 9/11 criminals, you know, Jerome Hauer, right? Those guys, Israeli-based security outfit that ran the Trade Center, and Black Cube, which is another Israeli Zionist security firm that named itself after the ultimate target of the Zionists, which, of course, is the Kaaba, the Black Cube in Mecca. So Weinstein is silencing his accusers using Zionist mafia Mossad type creeps, and that somehow doesn't surprise me.
So Black Cube, which is some kind of security firm attached to Weinstein, hires Stella Penn, and this is her family was one of the first Christian families recognized by Yad Vashem Holocaust Museum as a righteous Gentile. So anyway, there's all of this detailed history about all the agencies hired by Weinstein to find dirt on people he may have abused, women he may have abused, to keep himself out of trouble by intimidating and countering those who might bring forward charges or accusations against him, women who he had harassed in different ways, sexually harassed.
And
to me, this story is...
Raped, Tony. Rape is not just harassment. It's a pretty serious crime.
Well, it seems to me that was... There were some cases of that, but there's just a lot of multiple cases. Okay, well, I looking at the intense coverage of this story and the vast amount of detail given as kind of a diversion, the real story, it seems to me, is Jeffrey Epstein and the Lolita Express and the abuse of children and what Weinstein... You know, that this is important and significant, but nothing like the depth mm-hmm. of what the Jeffrey Epstein story points to.
Well, that's a great point, Tony.
Yeah, and it's a diversion. It's
okay. Point taken. Next slide. We have Larry David joking about the Holocaust and Jewish sexual predators, Harvey Weinstein. Wouldn't it have been better if he wasn't Jewish? You know, it's actually a pretty funny comedy routine here. And then, you know, he's imagining like hitting on women in a concentration camp. And of course there was massive pushback. Here we have Fox News. Here we have, what's the other one? New York Times and the Daily Beast, all just screaming, "Oy vey, what are you talking about, Larry? How can you talk about this stuff?"
Well, Larry David, of course, the producer of Steinfeld, you know, it really has a major role as a kind of pundit of U.S. popular culture. And It's interesting. I think he does kind of go into he kind of goes into a taboo by making jokes about picking up girls at the concentration camp, and that probably is a necessary is probably a good thing to get people a little leavened, a little lightening up around this question can't hurt.
And of course, that's why the media is so outraged, is you're not allowed to lighten up around that question. But actually, Tony, this is one of the things I really like about Jewish culture. I think all ethnic cultures have their good points and their bad points, or the stuff that I like and the stuff that I don't like. And Jewish culture, among the many things I like, is the sense of humor, including this dark, twisted sense of humor, which maybe I inherited to a certain extent or somehow absorbed by hanging around Jews a lot, which I have and part of my life. I don't know. Anyway, I like this. I think Larry David is it's kind of brave to go there and to violate this taboo on Holocaust jokes and to expose his real feelings about how when a member of the tribe is accused of something bad, has just happened that with Goldstein or I'm sorry, Weinstein, that he feels like it's a personal attack on him. Yeah, this is kind of a typical way of reacting among many Jewish people. And here he's making jokes about it and doing it pretty well. It's pretty funny and taking a lot of flack. So shout out to him and to the whole tradition of Jewish humor.
And let's not underestimate the influence of Jewish culture on you, Dr. Barrett. Yes, you are
Boy,
Muslim,
they.
but you've grown up in the United States. We grow up in the West, and we do partake, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse, in a lot of Jewish cultural influences.
Indeed. And a lot of it is good. Some of it, not so much. All right, how about the Cleveland Jewish News admitting that Holocaust denier Mark Weber is right? They're calling him a Holocaust denier. I'm not, but that's what they admitted in this story, that actually Mark Weber, the Holocaust denier, as they call him, was right that Jews were extremely influential in the Russian Revolution. So I thought that was kind of cool that a Jewish newspaper can basically admit that Mark Weber was right.
Yes, well, Mark Weber, he has a position on the gas chambers that is not in conformity with some revisionists. Anyway, he's an important figure. What is that journal that they do the
Institute for Historical Review.
Historical Review. I met him in Tehran,
Yeah, me too.
and interesting fellow. Sometimes I agree with him, sometimes I don't. We had it out on the Federal Reserve. He accused me of not really knowing the genesis of the Federal Reserve, and he argued that it wasn't really a private bank and it wasn't 14 sort of corporate entities that were given this charter right. Anyway, he plays different sides of different questions in controversial ways, and that's good. That's a good thing. And of course, the importance of Jews in the Russian Revolution in the early, in the early establishment of the Soviet Union. There's lots of evidence for that, and this is being discussed and brought out in a display in a Soviet museum. And let's bring out history. Let's have real debate on real issues.
Right. And once again, whether Jews were massively disproportionate in the Russian Revolution or not, that's one issue. And another issue is that a good thing or not? Here we have Eric Wahlberg, a Canadian Muslim, with his great new book out, The Canada-Israel Nexus. And Eric thinks that the Russian Revolution was basically a good thing. He's even though he's a Muslim, he's still pro-communist. And so for him, that's one of the many good things about Jewish culture. And he talks about this in a book, really interesting book. But we only have a few minutes left for a lot of stories. So let's move on to the Internet Police State rubric. Here we have Google Docs locking people out of their own documents, claiming that there are security threats in these documents. Tony, I think cloud computing is a scam and a conspiracy to control all of our data, if not our minds.
Yes, this concept of intellectual property, when you post things, say, on sites integrated into the Google system, are you giving up intellectual property? All of that seemed to me to be implicit in this article, which has a lot of sort of technical aspects to it. It's,
yeah, so they tell you that if you keep your documents on Google Docs, it's just exactly as if you kept them on your hard drive. But in the small print, it says, no, now they own it. I mean, come on. How can people go along with this?
Well, intellectual property, which is the most valuable kind of property in a way, but it's very difficult to imagine how we put, title deeds on certain ideas or theories or such, and, you know, isolate them and own them and buy them and sell them.
Well, in a sense, intellectual property is a contradiction in terms, an oxymoron, sort of like military intelligence and jumbo shrimp, because being an intellectual in a sense is being outside of the mentality of property. But that's a deep philosophical discussion. We don't do philosophy on False Flag Weekly News. So let's move on to Senator Lindsey Graham calling for a 9/11 commission to go after the way that Russia supposedly elected Trump by buying a couple of Facebook ads.
Oh, this effort to demonize Russia, Russia, Russia. I'm happy that we're getting closer relations one way or another with the Russians. I think that's really important to transcend some of our barriers and stop it, you guys. Like, let's get more integrated with all kinds of situations that are offered up by the new information technology and stop trying to fight it. Go with it.
But, you know, in a 9/11 commission for this, come on. Once again, it's as if people seem to think that the 9/11 commission was something other than what it was, which was a complete odious, treasonous farce. Speaking of 9/11, we have DEW stories, Tony. And occasionally, you know, I get harassed by various kinds of people. There are people who think I'm like not pro-Nazi enough. I get a lot of harassment from those people. I get harassment from Judy Wood fans who say I don't talk about Judy Wood and her idea that the Twin Towers were destroyed by directed energy weapons enough. So let's talk about DEW. Here we have...
Wait a minute. The idea that you're not pro-Nazi enough? You're saying, well, I'm a little bit pro-Nazi, just not Nazi enough. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think these people who harass me this way, like they find that, you know, the bias is so pervasive throughout the media that they'll take anything they can get. So they read my stuff because it's irreverent on these topics of Jews and Zionism. So they imagine that I should be somehow on their side and think that Hitler was a good guy or something like that. Yeah, I guess I still haven't really made that leap, and I doubt if I ever will. Yeah, I read David Irving's Hitler book, and Hitler's War, and didn't make me the least bit sympathetic to Hitler. So if that didn't, I don't know what would.
Well, sympathy, okay, be sympathetic or not, but analyzing people's role in history is just it entails a lot more than sympathy.
That's true.
Kind of rigorous judgment across a wide variety of subjects.
Well, my rigorous judgment is that Hitler rising to power was an unmitigated disaster, basically. But anyway, that's another topic that's way too big for this show. We're talking about directed energy weapons, Tony. Disaster. Directed energy weapons.
Just throw that in. Okay.
Yeah. And there's no Hitler connection to directed energy weapons, although I'm sure somebody will make a Hollywood movie imagining that there is. Here we have a Northern California fire captain talking about those fires, those crazy fires that just poof, went up all over the Santa Rosa, California area. And this guy sounds very credible to me, and he says that it's a DEW arson. These fires were not natural. And in the next slide we see that we had fires flaring up in the technical division of the Russian spy headquarters, the SVR. So, Tony, what do you think? Is somebody starting fires from outer space?
There's a Hollywood film circulating about that very subject right now, and it does look like a justification for doing just that. And I think we're probably much farther down the road of weather modification from outer space and through other devices and media as well than we're allowed to know.
Well, we know a lot of it by the
powers that be.
Colonel Bob Bowman, my late friend Bob Bowman, what a great guy, one of my very favorite people in the world and in the 9/11 truth movement, told me that when he was head of SDI, before it was called that, under Presidents Carter and Reagan, they already had the capacity to burn up whole cities from space. And the only reason he was allowed to tell me that was because some bigwig general had let it slip by mistake in a speech to Congress that turned out was on the record. It was classified, but he was able to tell me that. And they also had artificial meteorites that could be dropped from space as well. This whole Star Wars program was totally offensive, had nothing to do with defense. So if they could set a whole city ablaze from outer space in the 1970s, I would think they could start a few fires in Santa Rosa, California, or maybe even Russian spy headquarters.
Bob Bowman, who called himself a patriot and indeed was very high up in the military, very high up in what Ronald Reagan was calling
SDI.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he is one of the really pivotal key truthers when he joined the 9/11 truth movement.
Absolutely. And he joined the first day.
That was an amazing
He knew it was an inside job the first day. He looked at the no fighter jet response. But we have five, six stories left here. Let's do them. Trump bullying Korea. Oh, wait a second. No, the cancer cluster. Oh, yeah, that's right. This is Stuyvesant High School near Ground Zero. Huge cancer cluster. These people with thyroid cancer, kids with thyroid cancer. Thyroid cancer is a radiation cancer, Tony. That suggests maybe what happened at Ground Zero was nuclear.
Well, this is an enormous story, and this is a new feature. We've heard a lot about the high incidences of disease and cancer and other maladies affecting the first responders on 9/11. But now information about a school in the neighborhood that the people who were in that school on 9/11 are suffering disproportionately high rates of cancer. This is huge. This has broad implications.
Gordon Duff will talk about this on my show. Mm. He, of course, is avidly wedded to the nuclear demolition theory of 9/11. Speaking of nuclear issues, how about Trump in Korea? Next story, we have Trump selling vast amounts of weapons to South Korea as he whips up tensions. Somehow that doesn't surprise me too much.
Well, here's Donald Trump. His presidency turns out to be arms dealer in chief. Kim Jong-un in North Korea is a great boon for the United States because what do they have to sell? Well, they do still have weapons that they make in the United States that are, there's some demand for them, and now they can sell more of them to Japan and South Korea, and they can sell more of them to Saudi Arabia. And so this is what the chief huckster of the United States, Donald Trump, seems to be putting his top priority into.
And speaking of hucksters, in our next slide, how about Alex Jones telling us that Antifa was planning a civil war to overthrow Trump on November 4th? Well, somehow it didn't come off, Tony. Trump's still in power, and Alex has egg all over his face. It turns out that there were a bunch of these very modest anti-Trump rallies in different cities. But some satirist, I'm one of them, but I wasn't this one. There was a satirist who said something about Antifa is going to behead white parents. And so Alex Jones publishes this as if it's really news. Sometimes I think these conspiracy theorists like Alex Jones are completely, crazy.
Well, I take Alex Jones very seriously, as you know, and I see him as a kind of spokesperson scout for Donald Trump and his White House government. And I'm predicting that the next election, the re-elect Donald Trump election to come, will be based on Antifa. By this time, Antifa is being developed. You know, now it's just a kind of conceptual thing, but it's going to be given more and more substance through false flag events or whatever, and this connection of sort of left-wingers, communists, to Islamists and such, this will be developed in such a way that the next election will be sort of patriots, good, decent American patriots versus Antifa. That's the scenario I see coming ahead.
Well, Tony, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Antifa, but if the good, decent American patriots are the people who believe these idiotic stories, these insane fake news stories that Antifa is planning a civil war to overthrow Trump, or the Las Vegas shooter, Stephen Paddock, was a secret Muslim and who belonged to Antifa. And it's all an anti-Trump conspiracy to slaughter Trump supporters at a country music show. I mean, these people are so stupid. I mean,
oh, come on.
Them versus Antifa. I'll sign up with Antifa.
This ad hominem to the mask thing.
They are.
Stop it. I'm just presenting a...
Alex Jones people. These people are Islamophobic idiots.
Okay, we can pass all this kind of judgment. But what I'm conveying here is that Antifa, you know, doesn't really exist, but it can be made to exist. The appearance of it already exists. It can be given substance. Events can be developed. People can be hired. People can, well-intentioned people can be manipulated in ways. We will see Antifa and the alt-left, the alt-right, you know, it's being developed, the imagery, according to the Alex Jones Trump approach. They will become the patriots, at least in their imaginary self-world, self-contemplation, and people will buy into this. So patriots versus Antifa, not in a reality, but in this illusionary
reality
realm,
show.
which will be given, you know, some manifestation in the real physical world through false flag events or whatever.
Okay, well, I will avidly await the patriots versus Antifa. The reality show.
What is it? The 2014 election? The 2020 election. Is that what it is? Is that what it's going to be the next?
Yeah, you know, we're so tuned into events of the week, Tony, that we forget what year it is sometimes. But it is a false flag world out there for sure. And here's the latest evidence. Our final story today. Charlie Bit My Finger Dad is shocked his video was in Osama bin Laden's collection. When I saw this headline, wait a minute, what the? Well, it turns out the Navy SEALs that supposedly killed bin Laden in Abbottabad, Pakistan on May 2nd, 2011, supposedly found bin Laden's private stash of videos. And this was one of them, Charlie Bit My Finger. It's a viral kitty humor video that was seen by something like 800 plus million people. One of them was Osama bin Laden. So he wasn't watching False Flag Weekly News. He was watching Charlie Bit My Finger.
Oh, it kind of makes Osama bin Laden seem a bit darling. It makes him seem more human. It makes him seem more realistic. And remember, the terrorists can appear like good people anywhere around us. And remember, Osama bin Laden, who did 9/11, who knew everything about terrorism, he had to be eliminated by the U.S. military, who wouldn't even think of keeping him alive to get all of this information about the terrorist network around the world. Oh, man, the Osama bin Laden story. Here is another weird little twist.
Tony, let's do a quick analysis of this. Where did this story come from? The innocent, naive explanation would be that, yes, the Navy SEALs really went in there and killed Osama bin Laden, and they found a private video stash, and in the video stash there was Charlie Bit My Finger. Okay, that's what they want us to believe. So maybe that's how that story got there. I mean, you know, the world's pretty strange. But another possibility, Tony, would be that Seymour Hersh has blown this whole bin Laden killing story to smithereens. There's so many contradictions. So we don't know what happened in Abbottabad. We don't know if bin Laden was even alive or if he was dead back in 2001. So if that's the case, they're playing with us. So they're making up this story that Osama bin Laden was watching Charlie Bit My Finger. Now, what does that mean? Okay, stop and think about it, Tony. This is a false flag kitty humor video. It's about a false flag. Charlie is the supposed terrorist, the guy who bit the finger, who blew up the Twin Towers, right? So Charlie is supposedly the bad guy, but it's a false flag because his big brother is like sticking his finger in Charlie's mouth and orchestrating the attack on his own finger. So this is a false flag video, and the people that invented this story that it was found in Osama's collection are laughing their you-know-what's off at us for believing this crap, and they're nodding and winking at us as they plant this false flag video in Osama's collection.
Well, Dr. Barrett, I can certainly see that you've yet again manifested and demonstrated your astute ability to read geopolitics through stories that may seem to be innocuous, but indeed have a heavy burden of symbolism to make us fall for the lies and deceptions. With this kind of geopolitical analysis, Dr. Barrett, it's apparent why you're bringing down the big bucks. And thank you very much for your contributions once again this week. As we look to the next week and anticipate more false flag events.
See you then.
See you.
Welcome to False Flag Weekly News, the weekly news show that digs deep for what's really going on in the world. I'm Kevin Barrett with co-host Professor Anthony Hall, and we have a doozy of a list of stories today. Once again, there's way more than we can really do justice to, but we'll just do our best. And we're not going to beg for money because thank you, people set us up ahead of time. So let's get right on to the stories. Well, by the way, happy Veterans Day, folks. I will have Gordon Duff on, Veterans Today editor, on my radio show tonight. But let's get to the scary veterans news, which is veterans doing mass shootings in America. We had Devin Kelly from the Texas church supposedly killing 26 people, and I've seen no evidence that this is a total false flag, crisis actors or multiple shooters. No, I don't think so. But the guy's not linked to any terrorist groups, which means he's not Muslim. He likes atheists all over his Facebook page. If you like ISIS on your Facebook page, you're a terrorist. But if you like atheists and you go shoot up a church, you're not. Go figure. What do you think, Tony?
Well, here we have a shooting. Is it a real shooting? Is it staged? Is it directed at the First Baptist Church? Some sort of this mobilization of religious symbolism in this concocted global war on terror. But let's take it at face value, as we try to do. We try to give the benefit of the doubt before we get very skeptical.
Okay. Well, this was interesting. It happened in Texas, and the story is that the gunman, after mowing people down in church, left and was then suddenly pursued and fired upon by neighbors and a passerby. Apparently in Texas, there are a lot of armed people, but the pro-Second Amendment people apparently haven't gotten everybody armed, or else folks in the church could have all been shooting as well as the gunman, which actually probably would have helped. There's a whole gun control debate around this, and one theory is that these things are happening partly to take away our guns, and that might be part of the agenda. If it's Gladio B, they're trying to terrorize us into total submission to the powers that be, and, you know, we're not the only ones talking about this. The Washington Post, we see in our next slide, is talking about how everybody down there in Texas, right there by the hospital, by the victims, they're all talking about this being a false flag. Tony, do we have a bigger audience than shows up on our YouTube viewer count?
Who knows? Who knows how honest Google is? Of course, they're probably honest, right? With people like big wheels at Google wouldn't concoct things and mislead us. Or lead us into various research lines and away from other research lines. What catches me about this story, Kevin, is the blaming of the shooting on a certain Sam Hyde. This Sam Hyde comes up again and again. Sometimes he's a Nazi. Sometimes he's a Klansman, and he just wants to kill, and he produces all kinds of material on the internet about killing people. It sounds to me like a kind of Joshua Goldberg scenario, somebody who is an expert at creating these false personas on the internet, and this is all intertwined with this story.
Well, I don't know about Sam Hyde being a sophisticated intelligence agency Mossad operation. It sounds to me more like the Sam Hyde thing is kind of a sophomoric prank. There are lots of sophomoric pranks on the internet. Joshua Goldberg, at the surface level, looks like a sophomoric prank, but you dig a little deeper, and it turns out that he and his handlers have an agenda. But I don't think that's the case here with Sam Hyde.
Okay.
So that's my take, anyway.
It's a free country.
Yeah. But,
well, it is
indeed. Yeah. So we do have a lot of possible angles on how this. I mean, if it were a false flag, it could easily be a MK Ultra thing where this veteran who's been in the military where he could get worked on by their psyops experts could easily be programmed Manchurian Candidate style in an MK Ultra style brainwashing program to get him to do something like this. Why would they do this? They're not blaming Muslims. That's the main item on their agenda. Well, one spinoff here is that they're saying they need to be able to get into everybody's smartphone. They're saying that Devin Kelly's smartphone is unhackable, even for the FBI, even for the NSA. And so they're telling Apple that they have to put a backdoor into all smartphones so the NSA, FBI, and so on can read everything on everybody's smartphone. And this is there's a huge push for this now.
That nasty Apple company preventing people from spying on us more deeply. How dare Apple do that? And is Apple really doing that? Not. I doubt it.
I don't know. Christopher Wray at the FBI says, quote, in the first 11 months of the fiscal year alone, we were unable to access the content of more than 6,900, and then he repeats, that's 6,900 mobile devices using appropriate and available technical tools, even though we had legal authority to do so because of Apple. So do you think this is all a big concocted false flag distraction? Maybe so, Tony. Wouldn't put it past him.
Geez, the surveillance state just isn't being given enough room to penetrate deeper into our private information.
They can't read everything yet. That's terrible. Well, let's move on to the next story, or the next slide, rather, which is, okay, why would anybody down there in Texas, in the hospital where the victims are, be talking about whether or not this was a false flag? Why would they speculate about such things? Well, here's one reason. The Las Vegas thing is looking worse and worse. Every week we find more evidence that this Stephen Paddock shooting from the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel was not what it seemed. And here we have ballistics data showing us a muzzle flash from the neighboring room, not from Stephen Paddock's suite. At least that's how I read this. What do you think, Tony?
Is it possible that the Las Vegas Hall of Mirrors false flag is actually a variety of players who have different agendas, and somehow that's why there's so many inconsistencies and so many varieties of perspectives on this?
Yes, absolutely. And one scenario we see over and over and over, and we hear it from Laurent Guyanot regarding some French false flag events. We hear it from Robert David Steele regarding American ones, regarding Orlando and regarding Las Vegas. We hear people suggesting that in so many of these cases, we have a Western intelligence agency or Western deep state drill or something, drill operation that gets hijacked by Israelis and their organized crime assets. And often they take something where nobody was going to get hurt and they make sure a whole lot of people get hurt. That may have been actually what happened on 9/11, as the scream of anguish from a high-level CIA operative, the goddamn Israelis, as he watched the towers exploding and burning. That was Richard Fuse, who was screaming that. So maybe that's what's going on here. I don't know.
Is it possible that the term false flag is becoming normalized and integrated into the language so that everybody's starting to use it?
Well, U.S. officials are. Here we go. Lawrence Wilkerson, Colin Powell's right-hand man, Roger Cressley, Richard, Philip Mudd, Thomas McInerney, John Bolton, William Binney, all these ex-officials talk about false flags routinely because false flags are routine.
Yes, Philip Mudd with a very august title, CNN counterterrorism analyst, one of those using the term false flag to mean using other people's stuff. You want to do it in some kind of violent act. You don't want to use your own weapons, say if it's a U.S.-backed event. You want to plant Eastern European weapons or whatnot. That was Philip Mudd's view on it. Anyway, it's just so interesting how this term is just so casually being used now, as if people understand what it is. Of course, false flag, it seems to me that there's so many different types. There's so many variations on how it's done. We need adjectives to break down the different varieties of false flags.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Eskimos need a lot of words for snow. And the fish need a lot of words for water. I mean, we've got so many false flags around us of so many different flavors, varieties, hues, colors, and so on and so forth, that I guess we're going to have to work on that, Tony. Well, if we just copyrighted the term false flag when we started this show and forced everybody to give us a dime every time it was used, we would be a lot richer right now than we are.
We have a diversity of illusions.
Indeed we do. Well, if we want to get to the heart of this problem and solve this problem, which is really what it's about, right? I mean, every week we tell you so much bad news. Well, how could we make things better? Well, one way is to take away the power of the world's biggest crime cabal, which is the international banksters, by taking away their power to create our currency by lending it into existence at interest. And the way to do that is by making all currency creation public. There should be no more private currency creation, the Rothschild family should not be allowed to create most of the planet's currency. And that's what's going to happen in New Jersey if Phil Murphy puts through his program. He just won the election for governor, and he's a hardcore, big-time public bank supporter, even though he used to work for Goldman Sachs. This is great news. The establishment, as we see in the next slide, predicted it would be an uphill battle, but he won. Tony, you see public banking sweeping the world and solving all these problems that we talk about every week?
Well, just to see the word public being used in a good light is a significant development in its own right. This neoliberal era, there is no public sphere. There is no public interest. Everything has to be private, commodified, put borders around it and commodify it, make it into property, private property. A public bank, the idea that money should be conceived more as a public utility than something to be owned and contained and aggrandizement through this medium. Public banking, this has a huge implication. Ellen Brown is going to comment on this. In Canada, they're always talking about this Bank of North Dakota, the one public bank created by the state in the USA. In Canada, we have the Bank of Canada created in the 1930s that still exists, that has the power to do these interest-free loans, to create money in a different way, to create money in the public sphere and then lend it at no interest or very little interest for infrastructure projects to build up the quality of life for people, to make the economy more productive for everybody, including average people. In Canada, there's a running legal battle over trying to force the government of Canada to move away from the private bankers back to the system that once was in place until 1974 with this public bank, the Bank of Canada. So this is a huge topic, and money is in a way the ultimate false flag. This system can only work of creating new money through loans, through private bankers create loans, and this creates, you know, large quantities of new money. Until we get control of that. And of course, that system can only perpetuate itself with the fantasy that there is some value in this money when there is no real inherent value. But as long as we act as if there is, it works. Let's change the system. Way to go, Phil Murphy. Way to go, New Jersey. And this is a very important development.
And the private bankers aren't happy. In this story, we had Michael Afuso saying, why is this the lead talking point? Never have I heard a clamoring for a state bank. Well, you just heard it because the guy just got elected on that platform. Okay, well, I just did a little satire on this over Veterans Today. The Irish bankster conspiracy, Phil Murphy being, is it just a coincidence that this Irish guy who used to work for Goldman Sachs is pushing public banking? I mean, maybe the Irish are trying to take over the world and create a new world order with its capital in Dublin. Anyway, if you want the full story, read the satire. But next slide, Ellen Brown is coming on my show tonight, and she, of course, was reacting to the Phil Murphy campaign, and she'll have a lot more to tell us. But let's move over to Saudi Arabia, Tony, because that's where they prop up the Rothschild petrodollar, and there's all kinds of craziness happening over there. We have the king standing down, handing over power to Mohammed bin Salman, his son. We have 11 princes, 4 ministers arrested. And in the next slide, we see we have 2 rivals apparently assassinated, although this guy, Abdulaziz bin Fahd, who was supposedly killed in a shootout when he was being arrested, the Saudi authorities now are saying that he's still alive. And he's an interesting guy. He actually was calling for Muslims to head for Palestine to liberate the Al-Aqsa Mosque. He made that call last summer, and then he was shortly after that put under house arrest. And now he may be dead. We don't know.
Imagine the Riyadh Ritz-Carlton right now is being used as a prison. There is some kind of purge taking place. Mohammed bin Salman, he's taking over power. He's dispensing with his rivals. He's eliminating them or criminalizing them, otherwise detaining them.
For corruption. In Saudi Arabia, corruption?
It's so interesting, you know, when we think about Saudi Arabia trying to deal with all of this money and power that is sort of apportioned to them because they happen to be on top of this vast fossil fuel creation. You know, think back to the 1970s when you had Adnan Khashoggi as the most prominent Saudi Arabian, you know, dating Liza Minnelli, having great yachts, dressing, you know, Western style. And now you have these, you know, these same type of operations that were developed during that period, like Barrick Gold, for instance. But instead, it's under this guise of a kind of religious government. As I see it, the Saudi system, as it's breaking up, this must be a reflection that essentially a civil war type situation is developing among elites. And in the United States, we have a civil war situation among elites. Of course, the average people are sort of left out of any exercise of power. And people don't really care what they think. They just get the false flag, you know, iconography thrown their way so they can be manipulated by this elite or that elite. But
well, I don't know, Tony.
It's breaking at the top.
The people, you know, have a stake in some of these things. Like in the Middle East, all the people essentially unanimously, everybody in the region agrees that the Zionist entity, it's called Al-Kaihan Sioni in Arabic. You can't say Israel. You have to say Al-Kaihan Sioni because the whole region agrees it's not legitimate. Okay. And the Saudis prop up its legitimacy, but the Iranians essentially voice the unanimous view of the people of the Middle East. And that's what this conflict is about. Saudi versus Iran. That's the issue. That's the really only issue. Like, well, certainly the biggest one by far. And likewise here in the United States, these same conflicts involve the people versus the elites. And there, it's not quite as clear cut here. In some ways, the Democrats represent the people, like public health care, Bernie Sanders. In some ways, the Republicans do, you know, keep our guns and be skeptical of government. But the people are involved in this fight.
Okay.
Okay.
So how about the ideas?
Okay, that's yeah. You don't have to refute everything I say. So then the next slide we have Pepe Escobar. Pepe had a really good analysis of this Saudi Knight of the Long Swords, I would call it. He called it knives, referring to the Nazi event. But Tony, how about this Lebanon thing? The Saudis are not only basically declaring war on Iran, even as they're purging their own elites and arresting people left and right, they're essentially declaring war against Iran and Lebanon at the same time. Wow.
Well, here is Saudi Arabia kind of lost its effort to overthrow the government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria. Now in Lebanon is increasingly influenced. The government is influenced by Hezbollah, which is tied to Iran. So the leader of Lebanon, Saad Hariri, he resigns when he's in Saudi Arabia, complaining about the growing Iranian influence. There are the Saudis fighting the Houthis in Yemen in a sort of Vietnam-type situation that they can't win. They lost in Saudi Arabia. Now things are going against them in Lebanon. Its rival, Iran, is expansionary to some degree, is exercising a muscle. You know, it seems to have a right balance. It seems to have a viable balance between you know, the religious element of society and the more secular commercial aspects. Anyway, Saudi Arabia is increasingly under assault, and they're turning on each other in the core of the regime.
Well, Hassan Nasrallah asked, "Who's being kidnapped here?" Right? The Saudis claim that Lebanon has been kidnapped by Hezbollah, but the Hassan Nasrallah, who's a lot more popular in Lebanon than the Saudis are, that's for sure, suggests that maybe it's actually Saad Hariri who has been kidnapped by the Saudis and forced to read from a script. It certainly looks like a hostage video type situation over there. And so the next slide we see that they're also going after Qatar as the Saudis declare war on Iran and Lebanon at the same time. We have the UAE, the Emirates, declaring economic war on Qatar it's actually, they're not declaring it. It's secret. This was an effort to destroy Qatar's currency, and it was revealed by insiders at the Banque Havilland in Luxembourg, who then leaked it to The Intercept. So they thought they were going to destroy Qatar's economy and take away, steal their World Cup. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, Nasrallah, you know, the Hezbollah has built up its role within the Lebanese government. Hezbollah is the greatest check, the most significant check on the expansionary aspirations of Eretz Israel, Likudnik Israel. And so it's depicted as the ultimate terrorist. And now there's an effort to also isolate Qatar, which is doing business openly with Iran. And there's been an effort to use derivatives and all kinds of tactics to undermine their bonds and such. It's not working that well. Qatar continues to be viable. Qatar is a place where Al Jazeera has its base, and there's a lot of discussion. Important things go on in Qatar.
Okay. And you know, you and Trump, Tony, both need to know that it's not Qatar, it's Qatar. And Qatar. It's not Yemen, as Gordon Duff always calls it, it's Yemen.
Yemen.
Okay. So anyway, Frank Gaffney, let's go on to neocon Islamophobe lunatic, and look at those demonic eyes. Frank Gaffney is openly drooling at the prospect of a huge Saudi versus Iran war. These guys, these neocons are so shameless, and they're being propped up by the neocon media. This was in WorldNet Daily, which actually takes this lunatic seriously.
Ah, here comes the Persians. The alarm bell rings. The Persians are coming in with white hats, according to Dr. Barrett here. The Persians, the Islamic Republic of Iran, are the greatest scourge ever to hit humanity, according to Frank Gaffney. And he's just delighted to see Saudi Arabia being drawn deeper and deeper into outright aggression and conflict with Saudi Arabia, Arabia and Iran.
It's not just that I like Iran. It's not just that he hates Iran and loves Saudi Arabia. No, it's quite the opposite. He hates Saudi Arabia too. He hates all Muslims. He wants to destroy Islam. Whereas I'm basically saying that we're basing in an era of massive injustice against the entire Islamic world. And within that setup, the current Saudi leadership is very much on the side of those who are destroying the entire Islamic world, whereas the Iranian leadership, at least parts of it, are not. So that's, anyway, just a little clarification.
And it seems to me Frank Gaffney is quite approving of Saudi Arabian leadership and their hostility towards Iran. He identifies with that. The fact that there are also Muslims, well, that doesn't preoccupy him.
He'd love to see the holy cities and Riyadh as well in total rubble, I'm sure. Anyway, the next slide is the CIA 9/11 falsification attempt is shameless. This is Iran's view of how, as the U.S. Zionist proxy Saudis rev up their war on Iran and Lebanon, suddenly 9/11 shifts, and it wasn't 15 out of 19 hijackers who were Saudi anymore. Now it's all somehow the fault of Iran, because there was some tenuous link between LCIA, and the Iranians way back in 1990. Well, 1992 maybe it was. Okay, nice try there, guys. It's amazing people fall for this.
Well, let's remember that the group blamed for 9/11 to this day, Al-Qaeda, which got a lot of support from U.S. And other entities in its actions in Syria. It was known then as al-Nusra, that al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, Daesh, ISIL, these agencies are fought by the Iranian government and are genuinely opposed in battlefields by the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, for instance, and their proxy militias in Iraq, and by Hezbollah. Saudi Arabia, is with the terrorists. Iran is against the terrorists, and it's absolutely shameful for the U.S. to point to Iran, which is fighting the people who U.S. says did 9/11.
Of course, that's the real problem, is that they actually are fighting these Czech Fury extremist terrorists in Syria. And if we move to the next slide, we see that here we have the U.S. military helicopters evacuating ISIS commanders from Mayadin. And weapons, U.S. NATO weapons are being recovered in Mayadin and other places that where the Syrian government has taken back these former ISIS strongholds. So all of this that we were just talking about, all of this war that's brewing and boiling as the Saudis go berserk, why are the Saudis going berserk? Well, and why are the Israelis going berserk? And why is Frank Gaffney yearning for a bloody war? Well, it's all because Iran and its axis of resistance backed by Russia has won in Syria.
Yes, the decision by the government of Vladimir Putin in 2015 to actually commit military power to really fighting al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, Daesh, ISIS, they come in various names and brands, but it's the same group, it's a proxy army. That decision by Putin in 2015 to actually show what it looked like to fight them on the ground in a real way, not an illusionary way, changed history. And we're seeing the implications of that now.
We have a related story by Nafiz Ahmad. Nafiz is the author of kind of the first seminal great 9/11 truth book, The War on Truth. And here he is telling us what we pretty much already know on this show, which is that Turkey, Saudi Arabia, other U.S. puppet allies, NATO countries, et cetera, created ISIS, of course, on behalf of the U.S. and its Zionist sponsors.
Do we have an InSurge intelligence article after this, following this?
I don't think so. I think we have an NBC News article.
Because the way I looked at it, Nafiz Ahmad, he's the sponsor of this website called InSurge Intelligence.
Well, I think, yeah, this is probably up there, too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this is a different format for that same article. But in any case, this InSurge Intelligence article that contained this same story you're talking about, it featured a certain Professor Daniel Bieman, who was pointing to the role of Turkey and Pakistan and Saudi Arabia in funding and backing these what is depicted in the West as these terrorist organizations, these mercenary groups, these proxy armies. I was just wondering when I saw this Professor Daniel Bieman, and he apparently was a staffer on the 9/11 Commission, and this is given as a kind of credential, as a good credential, rather than as a discrediting feature of this person's CV. If Nafiz Ahmad isn't resorting a little bit to limited hangout with his new InSurge intelligence
mm-hmm. Well, that's what Gordon Duff thinks, too. And again, Gordon and Ellen Brown will be on my live radio show tonight. That's from 7 to 9 p.m. Central, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Revolution Radio, which is freedomslips.com. And, yeah, Gordon would definitely support that interpretation. He thinks this article is total limited hangout. I don't think Nafiz is doing that on purpose, though, Tony. Nafiz is just a kind of a cautious guy who sort of half stays in the mainstream world and is able to keep earning a living there, so more power to him.
And who keeps his university job.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe we should have taken a lesson from him rather than vice versa. I can't get him on the radio show because I know, you know, if we have an honest conversation, he's going to say things that'll get him in trouble. So moving on to Syria, you know, we are already in Syria, and this was already at InSurge, by the way, Tony. The previous story was InSurge Intelligence, and this story from NBC News points out that now the U.S. is the only country left that hasn't signed the Paris Climate Accords. Syria just signed. They were the last holdout. I guess they had other things on their mind. So here we are once again. Now we know who the real rogue state is.
And the fact that Syria is entering the Community of Nations is still able to participate in this kind of process, given the horrific assault that government has faced and the challenges to it, and it's still operational. It's quite a feat, really. I see it as a real testament to the resilience of the Syrian people in all of their diversity, who did stand in solidarity with their government through a really trying period.
Well, in a way, I'm surprised they didn't sign it earlier, because this whole problem in Syria is largely the result of desertification that destroyed a lot of Syria's agriculture. And the agricultural regions are primarily the ethnic groups that are unfriendly to the central government. And that's what led to all the unrest. Now, there's the innocent explanation that this was just climate change, desertification, and drought. But then there's the manufactured drought interpretation that says that this was indeed a destabilization program through weather modification. And Tony, when I was in Iran, I think it was the last visit to Iran, I talked to somebody who's involved in weather modification there, fighting back against the weather modification warfare against Iran, which is going on. And he said they're doing pretty well. They're holding their own. But for a while there, Syria was not, at least according to that interpretation. And so this whole Syria problem was very much set up by a massive drought.
And the question arises, to what extent is geoengineering taking place? To what extent are these droughts or storms being manipulated to create certain conditions, to achieve certain geopolitical objectives, to maybe have populations move from here to there? To what extent is the weather now a concocted creation of the national security state, the deep state? How real is geoengineering? Pretty real.
So when somebody comes along and says, "Man, let's talk about the weather," it's not as innocent as it seems. We could talk about the weather right here on False Flag Weekly News. Let's move on to another topic, though. Islamophobia. The truth about radical Islam. Okay, here we see massacres by gunmen who are not Muslim attributed, except, of course, the Islamophobes try to imagine that Paddock is actually an Islamic name. Whether they think he was like Ibn Paddock or Abdul Paddock or something, I'm sure. So we have two huge massacres by guns by non-Muslims, ostensibly. And then we have like an ostensible Muslim killing eight people with a vehicle. And, of course, the response is utterly and completely different. That's a pretty good point. And this whole radical Islam hoax in the next slide we see was pretty much a concoction by, well, Netanyahu in his 1979 Jerusalem Conference on International Terrorism and everything that's been happening since, including this whole series of anti-Muslim false flags. That's what's created Islamophobia. Tony, you and I went to Paris for the False Flag Islamophobia Conference a couple of years ago to point this out to people working on Islamophobia who will not admit the role of false flags.
Yes, this article by Cartolucci. Who is Tony Cartolucci? I've heard theories that there's an array of nom de plumes, but in any case, Tony Cartolucci, very influential commentator on the role of the Western intelligence agencies in creating these proxy armies that are made to appear as quote unquote terrorists. There's a focus in this article on Ahmed Sattar his role in all of this. Ahmed Sattar is connected to Abdel Rahman, who was connected to the 1993 events at the World Trade Center. Interestingly, the lawyer of Ahmed Sattar, Lynn Stewart, she ends up being incarcerated.
Next slide. Move on to the next slide. That's the Ahmed Sattar slide.
Yeah. Okay. That's the story. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the son of the guy who was framed for the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and related issues, along with this blind Sheikh Omar Rahman. But we got to move along here because
comment on this. So here is the son of Sattar becoming a fireman. His dad was represented by Lynn Stewart. The lawyer for Sattar ends up going to jail in the United States, just like the lawyer for Ernst Zundel in Germany, went to jail in Germany. And it seems that, attacks on Ernst Zundel were those that he was a terrorist and he was incarcerated for a long period of time in Canada without charge on terrorist certificates. The destruction of the rule of law to demonize terrorism, this is a feature that I wanted to draw attention to.
Right. And so this poor guy is subject to a witch hunt by the Zionist tabloid press in New York because his father was set up by Zionists and witch hunted by Zionists. Well, why would that happen? Well, it's because the Zionists have so much power in the U.S. government and in the British government. As we see in the next story, we have this big scandal where Priti Patel, this high-level minister with next to Theresa May, is doing secret meetings with Bibi Netanyahu and the rest of the Israeli creeps, and it's all top secret. Well, what's that about? Well, the Israelis are basically running the British government, just like they run the American government.
Dog bites man.
Okay, next slide. And over in Israel, our next Israeli Zionist scandal story, we have a possible false flag where there's supposedly an attack on the Druze village of Hadar, Syria, and the Israelis have been bombing Syria like crazy and with no media coverage whatsoever, are now ready to actually invade Syria using their own attack on this Druze village as the false flag pretext.
Yes, and the Israeli government and the Druze in Syria are quite compatible, apparently.
Yeah, well, the Israelis will always find anybody who's willing to work with them for money and for, you know, corruption and for, you know, turning on the other people around you. As long, you know, they'll pay off Kurds, they'll pay off Druze, they'll pay off just about anybody. In fact, we may be the last people that in media who weren't on their payroll. At least it would seem that way if you compare the content of False Flag Weekly News to everything in a lot of the rest of the media. But every now and then the media does its job on some story. And this Harvey Weinstein thing, they've really gone after him. The New Yorker had this amazing story about how Harvey Weinstein hired Kroll Associates, top-level 9/11 criminals, you know, Jerome Hauer, right? Those guys, Israeli-based security outfit that ran the Trade Center, and Black Cube, which is another Israeli Zionist security firm that named itself after the ultimate target of the Zionists, which, of course, is the Kaaba, the Black Cube in Mecca. So Weinstein is silencing his accusers using Zionist mafia Mossad type creeps, and that somehow doesn't surprise me.
So Black Cube, which is some kind of security firm attached to Weinstein, hires Stella Penn, and her family was one of the first Christian families recognized by Yad Vashem Holocaust Museum as a righteous Gentile. So anyway, there's all of this detailed history about all the agencies hired by Weinstein to find dirt on people he may have abused, women he may have abused, to keep himself out of trouble by intimidating and countering those who might bring forward charges or accusations against him, women who he had harassed in different ways, sexually harassed.
And to me, rape is not just harassment. It's a pretty serious crime.
Well, it seems to me that was... There were some cases of that, but there's just a lot of
multiple cases.
Okay, well, I looking at the intense coverage of this story and the vast amount of detail given as kind of a diversion, the real story, it seems to me, is Jeffrey Epstein and the Lolita Express and the abuse of children and what Weinstein... You know, that this is important and significant, but nothing like the depth mm-hmm. of what the Jeffrey Epstein story points to.
Well, that's a great point, Tony.
Yeah, and it's a diversion. It's
okay. Point taken. Next slide. We have Larry David joking about the Holocaust and Jewish sexual predators, Harvey Weinstein. Wouldn't it have been better if he wasn't Jewish? You know, it's actually a pretty funny comedy routine here. And then, you know, he's imagining like hitting on women in a concentration camp. And of course there was massive pushback. Here we have Fox News. Here we have what's the other one? New York Times and the Daily Beast, all just screaming, "Oy vey, what are you talking about, Larry? How can you talk about this stuff?"
Well, Larry David, of course, the producer of Steinfeld, you know, it really has a major role as a kind of pundit of U.S. popular culture. And It's interesting. I think he does kind of go into he kind of goes into a taboo by making jokes about picking up girls at the concentration camp, and that probably is a necessary is probably a good thing to get people a little leavened, a little lightening up around this question can't hurt.
And of course, that's why the media is so outraged, is you're not allowed to lighten up around that question. But actually, Tony, this is one of the things I really like about Jewish culture. I think all, you know, all ethnic cultures have their good points and their bad points, or the stuff that I like and the stuff that I don't like. And Jewish culture, among the many things I like, is the sense of humor, including this dark, twisted sense of humor, which maybe I inherited to a certain extent or somehow absorbed by hanging around Jews a lot, which I have and part of my life. I don't know. Anyway, I like this. I think Larry David is a, you know, it's kind of brave to go there and to violate this taboo on Holocaust jokes and to expose his real feelings about how when a member of the tribe is accused of something bad, has just happened that with Goldstein or sorry, Weinstein, that he feels like it's a personal attack on him. Yeah, this is kind of a typical way of reacting among many Jewish people. And here he's making jokes about it and doing it pretty well. It's pretty funny and taking a lot of flack. So shout out to him and to the whole tradition of Jewish humor.
And let's not underestimate the influence of Jewish culture on you, Dr. Barrett. Yes, you are Muslim, but you've grown up in the United States. We grow up in the West, and we do partake, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse, in a lot of Jewish cultural influences.
Indeed. And a lot of it is good. Some of it, not so much. All right, how about the Cleveland Jewish News admitting that Holocaust denier Mark Weber is right? They're calling him a Holocaust denier. I'm not, but that's what they admitted in this story, that actually Mark Weber, the Holocaust denier, as they call him, was right, that Jews were extremely influential in the Russian Revolution. So I thought that was kind of cool that a Jewish newspaper can basically admit that Mark Weber was right.
Yes, well, Mark Weber, you know, he has a position on the gas chambers that is not in conformity with some revisionists. Anyway, he's an important figure. What is that journal that they do? The
Institute for Historical Review.
Historical Review. I met him in Tehran. Interesting fellow, sometimes I agree with him, sometimes I don't. He, you know, we had it out on the Federal Reserve. He accused me of not really knowing the genesis of the Federal Reserve, and he argued that it wasn't really a private bank, and it wasn't 14 sort of corporate entities that were given this charter right. He plays different sides of different questions in controversial ways, and that's good. That's a good thing. And of course, the importance of Jews in the Russian Revolution in the early, you know, in the early establishment of the Soviet Union. You know, there's lots of evidence for that, and this is being discussed and brought out in a display in a Soviet museum, and let's bring out history. Let's have real debate on real issues.
Right. And once again, you know, whether Jews were massively disproportionate in the Russian Revolution or not, that's one issue. And another issue is that a good thing or not? Here we have Eric Wahlberg, a Canadian Muslim, with this great new book out, The Canada-Israel Nexus. And Eric thinks that the Russian Revolution was basically a good thing. He's, even though he's a Muslim, he's still pro-communist. And so for him, that's one of the many good things about Jewish culture. And he talks about this in a book, really interesting book. But we only have a few minutes left for a lot of stories. So let's move on to the Internet Police State rubric. Here we have Google Docs locking people out of their own documents, claiming that there are security threats in these documents. Tony, I think cloud computing is a scam and a conspiracy to control all of our data, if not our minds.
Yes, this concept of intellectual property, when you post things, say, on sites integrated into the Google system, are you giving up intellectual property? All of that seemed to me to be implicit in this article, which has a lot of sort of technical aspects to it.
So they tell you that if you keep your documents on Google Docs, it's just exactly as if you kept them on your hard drive. But in the small print, it says, no, now they own it. I mean, come on. How can people go along with this?
Well, intellectual property, which is the most valuable kind of property in a way, but it's very difficult to imagine how we put, title deeds on certain ideas or theories or such, and, you know, isolate them and own them and buy them and sell them.
Well, in a sense, intellectual property is a contradiction in terms, an oxymoron, sort of like military intelligence and jumbo shrimp, because being an intellectual in a sense is being outside of the mentality of property. But that's a deep philosophical discussion. We don't do philosophy on False Flag Weekly News. So let's move on to Senator Lindsey Graham calling for a 9/11 commission to go after the way that Russia supposedly elected Trump by buying a couple of Facebook ads.
Oh, this effort to demonize Russia, Russia, Russia. I'm happy that we're getting closer relations one way or another with the Russians. I think that's really important to transcend some of our barriers and stop it, you guys. Like, let's get more integrated with all kinds of situations that are offered up by the new information technology and stop trying to fight it. Go with it.
But, you know, in a 9/11 commission for this, come on. Once again, it's as if people seem to think that the 9/11 commission was something other than what it was, which was a complete odious, treasonous farce. Speaking of 9/11, we have DEW stories, Tony. And occasionally, you know, I get harassed by various kinds of people. There are people who think I'm like not pro-Nazi enough. I get a lot of harassment from those people. I get harassment from Judy Wood fans who say I don't talk about Judy Wood and her idea that the Twin Towers were destroyed by directed energy weapons enough. So let's talk about DEW. Here we have...
And just wait a minute. The idea that you're not pro-Nazi enough... you're saying, well, I'm a little bit pro-Nazi, just not Nazi enough. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think these people who harass me this way, like they find that, you know, the bias is so pervasive throughout the media that they'll take anything they can get. So they read my stuff because it's irreverent on these topics of Jews and Zionism. So they imagine that I should be somehow on their side and think that Hitler was a good guy or something like that. I guess I still haven't really made that leap, and I doubt if I ever will. Yeah, I read David Irving's Hitler book, and Hitler's War, and didn't make me the least bit sympathetic to Hitler. So if that didn't, I don't know what would.
Well, sympathy, okay, be sympathetic or not, but analyzing people's role in history is just it entails a lot more than. Sympathy.
That's
some
true.
Kind of rigorous judgment across a wide variety of subjects.
Well, my rigorous judgment is that Hitler rising to power was an unmitigated disaster, basically. But anyway, well, that's another topic that's way too big for this show. We're talking about directed energy
unmitigated
weapons.
Disaster.
Directed energy weapons.
Just throw that in. Okay.
Yeah. And there's no Hitler connection to directed energy weapons, although I'm sure somebody will make a Hollywood movie imagining that there is. Here we have a Northern California fire captain talking about those fires, those crazy fires that just poof, went up all over the Santa Rosa, California area. And this guy sounds very credible to me, and he says that it's a DEW arson. These fires were not natural. And in the next slide we see... that we had fires flaring up in the technical division of the Russian spy headquarters, the SVR. So, Tony, what do you think? Is somebody starting fires from outer space?
There's a Hollywood film circulating about that very subject right now, and it does look like a justification for doing just that. And I think we're probably much farther down the road of weather modification from outer space and through other devices and media as well than we're allowed to know.
Well, we know a lot of it explained to us by the
powers that be.
Colonel Bob Bowman, my late friend Bob Bowman, what a great guy, one of my very favorite people in the world and in the 9/11 truth movement, told me that when he was head of SDI, before it was called that, under Presidents Carter and Reagan, they already had the capacity to burn up whole cities from space. And the only reason he was allowed to tell me that was because some bigwig general had let it slip by mistake in a speech to Congress that turned out was on the record. It was classified, but he was able to tell me that. And they also had artificial meteorites that could be dropped from space as well. This whole Star Wars program was totally offensive, had nothing to do with defense. So if they could set a whole city ablaze from outer space in the 1970s, I would think they could start a few fires in Santa Rosa, California, or maybe even Russian spy headquarters.
Bob Bowman, who called himself a patriot and indeed was very high up in the military, very high up in what Ronald Reagan was calling
SDI.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And so he is one of the really pivotal key truthers when he joined the 9/11 truth movement.
Absolutely. And he joined the first day.
That was an amazing
He knew it was an inside job the first day. He looked at the no fighter jet response. But we have five, six stories left here. Let's do them. Trump bullying Korea. Oh, wait a second. No, the cancer cluster. Oh, yeah, that's right. This is Stuyvesant High School near Ground Zero. Huge cancer cluster. These people with thyroid cancer, kids with thyroid cancer. Thyroid cancer is a radiation cancer, Tony. That suggests maybe what happened at Ground Zero was nuclear.
Well, this is an enormous story, and this is a new feature. We've heard a lot about the high incidences of disease and cancer and other maladies affecting the first responders on 9/11. But now information about a school in the neighborhood that the people who were in that school on 9/11 are suffering disproportionately high rates of cancer. This is huge. This has broad implications.
Gordon Duff will talk about this on my show. Mm. He, of course, is avidly wedded to the nuclear demolition theory of 9/11. Speaking of nuclear issues, how about Trump in Korea? Next story, we have Trump selling vast amounts of weapons to South Korea as he whips up tensions. Somehow that doesn't surprise me too much.
Well, here's Donald Trump. His presidency turns out to be arms dealer in chief. Kim Jong-un in North Korea is a great boon for the United States because what do they have to sell? Well, they do still have weapons that they make in the United States that there's some demand for them, and now they can sell more of them to Japan and South Korea, and they can sell more of them to Saudi Arabia. And so this is what the chief huckster of the United States, Donald Trump, seems to be putting his top priority into.
And speaking of hucksters, in our next slide, how about Alex Jones telling us that Antifa was planning a civil war to overthrow Trump on November 4th? Well, somehow it didn't come off, Tony. Trump's still in power, and Alex has egg all over his face. It turns out that there were a bunch of these very modest anti-Trump rallies in different cities. But some satirist, I'm one of them, but I wasn't this one. There was a satirist who said something about Antifa is going to behead white parents. And so Alex Jones publishes this as if it's really news. Sometimes I think these conspiracy theorists like Alex Jones are completely, crazy.
Well, I take Alex Jones very seriously, as you know, and I see him as a kind of spokesperson and scout for Donald Trump and his White House government. And I'm predicting that the next election, the reelect Donald Trump election to come, will be based on Antifa. By this time, Antifa is being developed. Now it's just a kind of conceptual thing, but it's going to be given more and more substance through false flag events or whatever, and this connection of sort of left-wingers, communists, to Islamists and such. This will be developed in such a way that the next election will be sort of patriots, good, decent American patriots versus Antifa. That's the scenario I see coming ahead.
Well, Tony, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Antifa, but if the good, decent American patriots are the people who believe these idiotic stories, these insane fake news stories that Antifa is planning a civil war to overthrow Trump, or the Las Vegas shooter, Stephen Paddock, was a secret Muslim and who belonged to Antifa, and it's all an anti-Trump conspiracy to slaughter Trump supporters at a country music show. I mean, these people are so stupid. I mean,
oh, that, come on.
Them versus Antifa, I'll sign up with Antifa.
This ad hominem to the mask thing.
They are.
Stop
Tony.
It. I'm just presenting
a... Alex Jones people. These people are Islamophobic idiots.
Okay, we can pass all this kind of judgment. But what I'm conveying here is that Antifa, you know, doesn't really exist, but it can be made to exist. The appearance of it already exists. It can be given substance. Events can be developed. People can be hired. People can, well-intentioned people can be manipulated in ways. We will see Antifa and the alt-left, the alt-right, you know, it's being developed, the imagery, according to the Alex Jones Trump approach. They will become the patriots, at least in their imaginary self-world, self-contemplation, and people will buy into this. So patriots versus Antifa, not in a reality, but in this illusionary
reality
realm,
show.
which will be given, you know, some manifestation in the real physical world through false flag events or whatever.
Okay, well, I will avidly await the patriots versus Antifa. The reality show.
What is it? The 2014 election? The 2020 election. Is that what it is? Is that what it's going to be the next?
Yeah, you know, we're so tuned into events of the week, Tony, that we forget what year it is sometimes. But it is a false flag world out there for sure. And here's the latest evidence. Our final story today. Charlie Bit My Finger Dad is shocked his video was in Osama bin Laden's collection. When I saw this headline, wait a minute, well, it turns out the Navy SEALs that supposedly killed bin Laden in Abbottabad, Pakistan on May 2nd, 2011, supposedly found bin Laden's private stash of videos. And this was one of them. Charlie Bit My Finger. It's a viral kitty humor video that was seen by something like 800 plus million people. One of them was Osama bin Laden. So he wasn't watching False Flag Weekly News. He was watching Charlie Bit My Finger.
Oh, it kind of makes Osama bin Laden seem a bit darling. It makes him seem more human. It makes him seem more realistic. And remember, the terrorists can appear like good people anywhere around us. And remember, Osama bin Laden, who did 9/11, who knew everything about terrorism, he had to be eliminated by the U.S. military, who wouldn't even think of keeping him alive to get all of this information about the terrorist network around the world. Oh, man, the Osama bin Laden story. Here is another weird little
twist. Well, Tony, let's do a quick analysis of this. Where did this story come from? The innocent, naive explanation would be that, yes, the Navy SEALs really went in there and killed Osama bin Laden, and they found a private video stash, and in the video stash there was Charlie Bit My Finger. Okay, that's what they want us to believe. So maybe that's how that story got there. I mean, you know, the world's pretty strange. But another possibility, Tony, would be that Seymour Hersh has blown this whole bin Laden killing story to smithereens. There's so many contradictions. So we don't know what happened in Abbottabad. We don't know if bin Laden was even alive or if he was dead back in 2001. So if that's the case, they're playing with us. So they're making up this story that Osama bin Laden was watching Charlie Bit My Finger. Now, what does that mean? Okay, stop and think about it, Tony. This is a false flag kitty humor video. It's about a false flag. Charlie is the supposed terrorist, the guy who bit the finger, who blew up the Twin Towers, right? So Charlie is supposedly the bad guy, but it's a false flag because his big brother is like sticking his finger in Charlie's mouth and orchestrating the attack on his own finger. So this is a false flag video, and the people that invented this story that it was found in Osama's collection are laughing their you-know-what's off at us for believing this crap, and they're nodding and winking at us as they plant this false flag video in Osama's collection.
Well, Dr. Barrett, I can certainly see that you've yet again manifested and demonstrated your astute ability to read geopolitics through stories that may seem to be innocuous, but indeed have a heavy burden of symbolism to make us fall for the lies and deceptions. With this kind of geopolitical analysis, Dr. Barrett, it's apparent why you're bringing down the big bucks. And thank you very much for your contributions once again this week as we look to the next week and anticipate more false flag events.
See you then.
See you.